This episode of The Line is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Line, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to Star Trek Picard. I'm Chrissy DeClercq-Zalagi, and joining me today are my co-hosts, Brandon Shematala and Justin Ozer. Brandon, how are you today?
Jolan True. I'm doing great. I've got my meaty broth here, my greasy, meaty broth that I'm going to be eating and while we're talking.
From a loyal establishment, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
And Justin?
Live long and prosper. I'll just go against what the theme we'll be talking about is. But no, it's great. It's great to be here and talking about Picard again and talking about some more stuff in the run-up to this series. It's very exciting.
What series? What are you talking about?
You know.
Oh, yeah.
The one that we're going to be talking about. That's going to happen. Sometime pretty soon. I mean, listeners, we're recording this on July 8th, and it's just going to be a little bit until San Diego Comic-Con, where I'm sure they'll dump a bunch of news and stuff and a release date and all that. But for now, we don't know too much, so.
Well, let me ask you about that before we get into our main discussion here. So, San Diego Comic-Con, how long away is that from here? Because I'm in Canada, right? So, how long until San Diego Comic-Con?
It's 12 days from now. It's on July... Well, actually, sorry, it's 12 days until they do like a big presentation for Star Trek, but I think it starts on the 18th, so...
Okay.
It sounds right.
Yeah, it goes for a couple days.
Okay. And then, so yeah, Vegas is after that.
Yep.
So, you think they'll make the big announcements at San Diego Comic-Con rather than Vegas? Because they announced Picard, the show, at Vegas last year.
Yeah, it's a good question, although they've already said the entire announced cast, including Patrick Stewart, will be at San Diego Comic-Con, so I think they're going to have something big there, a trailer or something, I would think, right?
Mm.
One would think, but I don't know. The other great thing is that I think they said they're going to have a display of costumes and props from the Picard series, and if it's anything like previous years, that'll come to Star Trek Las Vegas, too.
Are you going to San Diego Comic-Con, either of you?
No. But I'll be at Star Trek Las Vegas for a couple days.
And I wish I could be, but I can't.
Yeah. I'll send you
pictures. But I'll be watching on Twitter and there in spirit.
Yeah. So lots of excitement coming.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they're going to talk about something, but I bet they'll have something new for Las Vegas, too. They'll do like, here's a trailer. And then maybe in Vegas, they'll be, here's a, you know, an extended scene from the first episode or something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't be right if they didn't leave something for that.
Yep. And our listeners in the future will know for sure. So they're ahead
of us. Yes. It's like they time traveled.
Yeah.
All right. So then on to our topic. Given what we have heard and seen about the show, it's likely that it will focus at least partially on the Romulans. So we've decided to look back at the times we saw Picard interact with the Romulans to create a basis for analysis for his potential actions on the new show. We've decided to look at themes and questions to get to the heart of the relationship between our captain and the Romulans, and how each deal with and perceive each other. And I know for sure that we are going to miss something, and I know for sure that someone is going to disagree with one of the assumptions or the analyses we make, and we are very happy to discuss those with you in the Babel Conference, so please head over there and keep this discussion going after you've listened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because one of the things that they told us about the show is that it's definitely post-Nemesis, mm-hmm. and it's definitely post-Hobus, what is it, the Hobus star?
Yeah, the Hobus supernova that destroys Hobus Romulus. Supernova. Yeah.
So for those that are a little bit confused, because this is something that's been going around on Twitter, like just a little explanation is that, because I was talking with my wife about this, right? And I'm like, Romulus was exploded in the Prime timeline. And my wife was trying to convince me. She's like, no, it wasn't. It was destroyed in 2009. And
my wife was confused about that as well.
Yeah. And so finally, I couldn't understand why she was confused. And then it realized, like, my wife's not as big a Star Trek fan as me, and she doesn't know all the minutiae.
My wife is a big Star Trek fan, and she was still confused because I think that, like, it's something that happens in the 2009 movie. And, like, if you're thinking, like, the whole thing takes place on a certain timeline, but I've seen it out there, like, you know, they've had to put out these charts, like, okay, this happens in the Kelvin timeline, this happens in the Prime timeline, but it does get destroyed in the Prime timeline in 2387.
I've got the explanation.
Yeah, okay.
The people that are like, confused on this, Vulcan explodes on screen.
Right.
Romulus does not.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So I think that that's the reason for the confusion and why a lot of people seem to think that, no, Romulus is destroyed in the Kelvin timeline, is because we see Vulcan destroyed in the Kelvin timeline.
Actually, like, I was trying to think because I rewatched those scenes recently, and you see, like, Spock in the Prime timeline and his jellyfish ship, and you see the supernova happen. I was trying to think, you might see something where it seems like it's coming toward Romulus, but it's definitely not as much of a focus or as dramatic as what happens to Vulcan, right? So that tends to be what you remember more.
Right. So, like, for how the timeline goes, so the Hobus supernova happens, Romulus is destroyed, and somewhere around that, in that event, is when Spock gets sent back in time into the Kelvin timeline, and then we go through and Vulcan gets destroyed there. But basically, all those things that happen, like, from Spock's point of view, happen prior to the movie.
Right.
Right. And we only get information in flashbacks. I think that's why people are confused as to when these things take place. And I kind of wanted, since we're talking about the Romulans and we know that in the Prime timeline, it will be post the destruction of Romulus. I wanted to kind of clarify that for people, because I'm sure there are some listeners out there in the audience that are like, no, it was destroyed in the Kelvin timeline. So I thought it'd be good. So sorry for interrupting your train there, but I thought that'd be good.
Not at all. Not at all. That's important to point out. Not everybody's read Countdown. Everybody read Countdown.
It's not that good.
Well, but it's background. It doesn't have to be, you know, fantastic.
I can't tell if you're joking sometimes.
Yeah, I can't either, but I'm just going to go with it. It's fine. If people are interested in reading Countdown and you don't mind reading your books electronically, the Comixology app has it as one that can be borrowed if you have their monthly subscription. So you don't have to buy it outright. So we started out looking at the various episodes in which we have direct interaction between Captain Picard and the Romulans. And as I was going through them, I found that there were some themes and questions that come up as you're watching them that are very consistent throughout. And so the first of those is just to look at a generalized thing about how does Picard deal with Romulans. And when we're looking at our good captain, we see that he tries to deal with people of other cultures coming at it from their perspective. So if he's dealing with, say, the Klingons, he's going to be assertive. Dealing with the Ferengi, he might be a little bit conniving. And with the Romulans, he tends to be quite calculating. As he says in The Defector, it's always a game of chess with them. So what do you guys think about that?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, we drew up a list of episodes. I think the Romulans appear in 20-plus episodes of TNG, but it's, you know, various importances or where Picard. So we've kind of taken it to certain episodes where it seems like it's the more significant interactions. And what I was really interested to see is that, I mean, I think we know Picard tends to be very diplomatic, right? He wants the diplomatic solution, if at all possible. And pretty much, like, he's able to get through things with a diplomatic solution all the way up until Nemesis. I don't think you really see the Enterprise actually do, I could be wrong about this, but I don't think you see the Enterprise actually do battle with the Romulan ship until Nemesis. So up until that point, there are these things that get really close. I know you're looking at me skeptically, Chrissy, so that may not be right.
No, I'm trying to think of an instance. I'm not skeptical, just...
Yeah, but But I thought that was interesting because we look through the episodes and, you know, you see the Romulans first in the neutral zone in the first season and it's like, you know, we're back. And what's interesting about that one is that Picard gets this advice from Troy and he's like, oh, they're counterpunchers. Very interesting. And there's a point at which, you know, the Romulans are appearing or getting ready to appear. And he's like, you know, don't arm the weapons. Don't do that. And you see that theme throughout some of the different episodes where he's like, let's not escalate it. And he is able to get through the situation. So I think generally it's diplomacy, but when he has to do battle, like a Nemesis, he will.
Mm-hmm.
Right with the front end of the ship, no less.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that the chess is an interesting metaphor to use as to the way that you deal with the Romulans, because, you know, the goal of chess is to outthink your enemy, right? So I think that could be a very accurate way to describe the interactions with the Romulans, because the Romulans are kind of conniving aliens. And, you know, while I personally prefer the Cardassians and think that they are more conniving, you know, like the until I got older and appreciated the Cardassians a bit more, like the Romulans always were my favorite antagonists in Star Trek because of that. You know, even going back to the original Star Trek, not having them very much, I remember seeing Generations in the theater for the first time, not really knowing anything about it, and seeing that dead Romulan, and I was just like, yes, the Romulans are finally in a movie. And then that was all that we saw of them, right?
Right.
So I was a little disappointed with that. But yeah, so chess is a very interesting example, because yeah, you do want to outthink your opponent and get them to a point where they can't move, right? Where their only way is to back out completely and concede defeat. And that is kind of the interactions that you have with Romulans. So,
and he literally says that in neutral zone. So I'd rather outthink them than outfight them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and going off of that, yeah, I think chess is an interesting analogy, because Picard, I think, is using he's being diplomatic, but he's using some different strategies under different circumstances. Like, there are some where he's like, don't arm the weapons. Let's, you know, make sure that we don't seem hostile. And then there's others where it's like, okay, we're going to arm the weapons. We're going to talk to them. And sometimes when he's talking to them, like, you know, an example with Tomalak and there's this confrontation. I was trying to remember the specific episode, but it's the one where Picard has the Klingons decloak and it's like, shall we die together? Isn't the defector? Yeah.
Yep.
So shall we die together? So he's like putting forward this really aggressive posture. And then there are other times where, you know, let's say in the Pegasus, where he's kind of doing this thing where he's not really saying why they're there. They're both playing the game, like Cyril and Picard are both playing this game like, oh, how interesting. We're cataloging gaseous anomalies as well. You know, where they're really like saying something to each other, but it's below the surface. It's not in their actual words. It's in more the context or the subtext. And then after that, you know, when they have the phasing cloak and they get out of the asteroid that's there, it's like, we're just going to report this incident. Everything's going to be fine. You know, like he's using all of these different strategies. And I thought that was really interesting looking at all these different episodes. Sometimes it's really aggressive. Sometimes it's really kind of threatening below the surface. Sometimes it's like, we just need to, you know, end this and report it to the government. So, yeah.
Yeah. So the other thing that I really noticed in terms of how Picard deals with the Romulans that really stuck in my head was that the way he interacts with them shows that he does not so much consider them enemies, as in, you are my mortal enemy, as much as opponents due to the political situation. Right? Mm-hmm. And that is pretty much how he deals with anybody who is on the other side, with the notable exception of the Borg, because they're the Borg. You know, and there's, and even them, after you have Hugh, it's a little bit different, because he recognizes some potential for movement there. But for the most part, he sees the Romulans simply as, they are these people, they're on the other side right now, but we don't know where they'll be in a few years. And in fact, one can look forward to the alliance during the Dominion War and say, well, maybe they're not friends, but we're going to work together.
Yeah, I actually have a little disagreement with saying that that's the way
Please.
He is with everyone, because I think of the Cardassians in an episode like The Wounded, where at the end, I think it's clear that Picard kind of considers them to be an enemy worth watching. And he's doing this thing where he's saying, you know, we'll be watching you. And he turns his back in like this insulting kind of gesture to the Cardassian. So there are times, I think, when he feels like that kind of posture is needed. But I think you're right, for the most part, and also for the Romulans, it's, I mean, also like in the neutral zone, they haven't really seen them in 50 years. So he doesn't quite know, like, he has to kind of feel them out. But I think he is always, you know, hoping for some kind of alliance. I mean, especially see that in The Defector, where it's like, you know, we hope we can deliver this letter someday, right? He's always kind of hopeful that something will get better and they just don't have to be destroyed.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting point about the Cardassians and the Wounded. I had forgotten that ending to it, but you're right that I think you're right in that he determines that they're more of an adversary to watch. But I kind of found in Next Generation that one of the frustrating things with the Romulans is that it never got to a conflict. And as a youth, I always wanted to see that, right? I always wanted to see a conflict with the Federation and the Romulans. And I don't know if I still would like to see that older, right? Like, in hindsight, I don't mean like in a new series, but I mean, if I were watching Next Generation for the very first time right now, would I want to see conflict between the Federation and the Romulans? And I kind of think that I would, you know, because all of the interactions, like you've been saying, are these peaceful ways to outthink them. And it would kind of be nice to have a battle once in a while. I don't know. Cause you know, the Derridix class ship is such a large ship compared to the Enterprise. You know, that it almost would have been nice to see them go head to head.
That's true. And you don't actually see that. But I mean, you do see the Enterprise E go head to head against some Romulan ships in Nemesis, right?
Yeah.
So which I think it's interesting that they kind of waited up until that point. I actually kind of like that it doesn't end in conflict, because one of the things I like the most about Star Trek is that these things can happen where it seems like a conflict's coming and you can find a way to avoid it. Because I actually prefer seeing conflicts get avoided than to actually happen, with a few exceptions. The Dominion War makes for something super interesting in DS9. But I actually like that that's kind of avoided, and there's kind of maybe a lesson there. And I always thought that after the Defector, that maybe at some point they would, I mean, they do have an alliance in the later part of the Dominion War, but it's not like it's a permanent kind of alliance. It's more like we have to do this because we have to do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to start somewhere.
Well, you're the peaceful captain of this podcast, and I'm just Worf at the back, you know, threatening we should fire, and you're just telling me no all the time, Justin. See, yes. The thing with
Mr.
Nemesis,
Worf, hold back your fire.
Hold back your fire. The thing with Nemesis, you know, you bring it up, and even still, I don't consider that a Romulan movie, because it's these Reemans, right? You know, you got Reemans and Shinzon. And while there are a couple of Romulans that you see it, I mean, you know, like the Valdor comes in and they're fighting with the Enterprise, right?
True.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, like the Scimitar is that's not really a Romulan ship, that's a Reeman ship.
Well, yes, they're not Romulans, but at that point, Shinzon is kind of the head of the Romulan Empire, so you could consider him. But yeah, I see what you mean. It's not quite the same kind of thing that it's been building up to, with the same kind of characters and personalities, right? It's not like if it would be like Tomalak or Sorrel coming by and firing on the Enterprise, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Small tangent, that Nemesis was way better with the movie that was in my head after I saw the trailer than the actual movie we got. But if you watch the trailer, I totally thought that this was going to be like a Mirror Universe movie. If you watch that with that in mind, I'm like, oh my goodness, this is going to be the greatest movie ever. You should watch that one where it's got that deleted dialogue from Worf, you know, and like all that stuff. I'm like, this is totally going to be a Mirror Universe movie. We got Mirror Data and all this. And then we got...
Is that the one where they morph like Picard's head to Shinzon's head?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Such a great trailer. That trailer is way better than the movie.
Oh dear.
I do like aspects of the movie. It's not my favorite, but that trailer is really, like, I remember, you know, watching that somewhat later and I was like, wow, that's awesome. And the movie turned out pretty different.
I rewatched Nemesis for the first time in years.
I'm sorry to hear
in
that.
In preparation for this. And I got done with it and I said, okay, it's not the best. It's no Undiscovered Country, but it wasn't as bad as I remembered it being. And I think that had been colored by a lot of people's dislike. It does end rather abruptly. That was a big complaint.
It does. Actually, the deleted scene for the ending is actually better than the ending you see.
I'll have to go back and watch that one again.
That's actually a really good one. I think it's on the... must be on the Blu-ray. But yeah, okay. It's actually a really nice, kind of hopeful ending. Yeah.
All right.
Is that the one where the guy calls him Jean-Luc?
That's right. Where you have his new first officer, Commander Madden, I think it is. Yeah.
Hayes. It's Hayes, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the guy who played Major Hayes. Yep.
Oh, same guy. Cool. I didn't know about that.
It's actually really cool. I mean, it's this kind of extended scene, and they're just going to kind of go out there and explore again. It's actually really nice. Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Wow.
Alternative Factor is better than Nemesis.
Alternative Factor. I know you'll say Alternative Factor is better than a lot of things, and I'll disagree.
I'm going to abstain from an opinion there.
Good. I win. You guys don't fight me on that one.
There you go. Oh. Right, and abstention's as good as a no, okay, or a yes. Right, to get back to what you were saying, Justin, I agree with you about the Cardassians, but I think we'd both be in agreement that should the Cardassians offer the potential for peace, which they would never do, but should they offer the potential for peace, I think he'd be he wouldn't be standing there saying, no, I'll never work with you.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
or maybe not. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but...
No, I think that's true. I was just thinking about, like, in that episode, in that moment.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. The exception to this, where Picard is not necessarily looking for the most peaceful means, is when the Romulans get involved in the Klingon Civil War. And I think the reason that is because the hostilities have already happened. And so he's still looking for peace, but you have to get things to a point where negotiating can be considered. So he makes these arrangements that's going to assure minimal bloodshed. And that is the blockade.
Right. The blockade is still a very peaceful solution.
Absolutely.
You know, that's very much in character.
It's a bit manipulative, too.
Mm-hmm. So I think it's a good solution for everybody, you know, and I like how Sela, you know, counteracts that, and that we get Data stepping up and showing his ability as a commander in that scene.
I mean, the interesting part of that, I mean, especially Redemption Part 2, I mean, I kind of like, because it seemed like in the first part, you can't intervene, but he's found this way with the blockade, which I think is great. But what's... And there is like a little confrontation between Picard and Sela when she beams aboard, but this is one of those situations where it's not Picard saving the day against the Romulans, it's Data.
True.
Which I think is pretty interesting, because I'm not sure if I could say all, but I think at least most of the situations where we see him interact, Picard is the one with the diplomatic solution who's saving the day. But in this one, he's telling everyone, you know, we need to fall back. We need to go to, you know, a better position. And, you know, that could be a real problem. And it's Data that disobeys the order and finds the solution. And of course, later Picard is like, well done, you know, mm-hmm. but yeah, this is one of those exceptions. So I think it's not always Picard that's most well-suited for dealing with the Romulans, apparently.
I hadn't even thought of it that way, but that is very true. So, and it actually does bring to another point that I had, is that Picard's ego does not stand in the way of these things. And the issue with Data is an excellent example of that, because he could have turned around and said, you know, another captain might have said, oh, well, that was my idea, and Data was just carrying out the plan that we had created in the case of this. Because he's subordinate, so he could have taken credit for something that his subordinate did, but he doesn't. And we also see that in The Defector, when Tomalak demands an apology and Picard says, well, if an apology will take care of this, then I'll apologize. That makes no difference to me. I'd rather have a peaceful solution. If it takes me not having a huge ego, then fine.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good point. There are different parts where you see Picard kind of setting himself aside and being willing to say, if that's what you want. And I also think it's not the Romulans, but I think of another example, like in Q Who, when Q brings them to the Borg and they're trying everything they can do. And Picard has to kind of humiliate himself and be like, okay, if you want to see that we're frightened, we're frightened. Help us. You know, it's like he's willing to, when the ship is in danger, he's going to set himself aside and do what he needs to help the ship and save the crew. So I think you're right. You do see that in so many situations. And I think that's one of the things that makes Picard a really great captain. He's not in it for his own, you know, glory or accomplishment or to tell everyone that he's the best captain there is. He wants to do the best he can for the mission and for the Federation. And I think that shows in pretty much all these encounters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got it. Even with, what is it, the Shellyak?
Oh, yeah.
Right in, what's that, the I think it's the Ensign's in Command.
Yeah.
Right when he's like, you know, they find a way around it. And, you know, that's just the diplomacy. And, you know, I think what we're seeing here is a trend, and it's not just the way that Picard deals with the Romulans. It's the way that he deals with everybody, yep. I think. You know, like even with the Cardassians in The Wounded, you know, he comes to that very diplomatic solution, solves the problem, gets everything taken care of, and then says, by the way, I know you're lying.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
You know, so like he lays his cards out on the table for that Cardassian after the solution has presented itself, after it's all been taken care of. But I think that this is just more of just Picard in general and how he deals with all aliens, because, you know, there's never an instance that I can think of in all of Star Trek The Next Generation where Picard fires first.
Ooh.
I think you're probably right, although there's so many episodes to think about, but I think that, yeah, you're probably right about that, and that seems to be his philosophy. And there are certainly episodes where there's this confrontation, another ship fires, and they actually fire on them a couple times before he's like, all right, let's fire back. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes I'm just like, come on, they've already hit you, but he is very hesitant to use weapons. He'll only use them if he needs to. I think you're right about that.
Right. And then like the way he deals with adversaries, like I look at Sisko and Eddington, right? Mm-hmm. And how mm-hmm. that culminates with the destruction of that planet.
Well, and for Sisko, that was in a large part about ego, actually. He's like, I can't believe I can't do this. Mm-hmm. Picard would have had a different way of dealing with it, probably.
Yeah. Where, you know, like, as much as I love Sisko and he is my favorite captain, you know, a lot of that is because of like drama, and I like watching him, and I love watching Avery Brooks as an actor. I mean, like, you know, in a situation like that, Picard would never, ever stoop to the level that Sisko did in that event.
To poison the planet? Absolutely not.
No.
Yeah.
No, he wouldn't. I mean, that's what's shocking about it. It's like, wow, I can't believe Sisko just did that, you know? And they've written him into a situation where that kind of is the solution, but it makes you wonder like what Picard would do. But you're right, he's not going to go to extremes like that. He's not going to put his ego in there like Sisko might. And I love Sisko too. I mean, he ranks as high for me as Picard, but it's very different for different situations.
Well, it makes you think, like you said, the way that the writers were to do that. Like, let's say that they pulled that Eddington plot out and they popped it in Next Generation, and they wrote that exact same episode except with Picard instead of Sisko. I don't think that would ring true for Picard if that was played out exactly and they wrote it. Like, it is a culmination of what the writers did to write that episode.
Yeah.
But it does feel true to Sisko's character and would not feel true to Picard's character. And to me, that's kind of why First Contact doesn't ring true for me with his reaction to the Borg in that movie. After we've seen his development in, you know, in I-Borg and in Descent, right? First Contact doesn't ring true for Picard's character, but that's me.
Yeah, well, I disagree with that, because I think that the Borg is like a special case that can get him into that situation. But yeah, like, if you think about how Sisko deals with Eddington, and then it makes me think about an episode I rewatched recently, Preemptive Strike, which is pretty much the TNG episode where you get to really see the Maquis, mm-hmm. he's kind of giving Ro this chance, and she kind of like gets away and defects to the Maquis. I'm sure that Sisko would have dealt with something like that very differently. He likes to give people chances, multiple chances often, and to try to give someone the room that they need to get there. But sometimes it's going to lead to a failure like that, right? Whereas whatever Sisko does, however you think of it, if his only goal was to apprehend Eddington, he was successful. You know what I mean? And Picard, I think, is willing to be unsuccessful in certain things if it means going to a level he doesn't want to go to.
Yeah. When you brought up Sisko, I thought you were going to say the thing about, he punched me. Picard never punched me with Q. Which another example of that, but...
It's an interesting difference. Picard, I don't think, would ever think about that. And Sisko is like, I hate this guy. Punch, go away. You know, like, very much like a gut reaction that Sisko has, whereas Picard's reaction is like an eye roll and like, I can't believe this guy is here, but he's going to talk to him. He's not going to try to, like, attack him, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, and I think as long as Picard isn't taken over by an alien entity, that's kind of his default. I'm going to talk. I'm going to try to understand, right?
Yeah. And even when he gets replaced, he still talks and sings. So,
and sings and drinks.
Yeah. Ales for everyone.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we know that he's trusted by Starfleet. Basically, he's trusted by Starfleet in general. In particular, he seems to be trusted by Starfleet to deal with the Romulans and the Defector. But at the same time, one gets the impression that he's going to be the one who's blamed if things go poorly, and that there's not going to be any great deal of praise if things go well. So he's out there, they know that he can do the job correctly, but if it messes up, then he can be a potential scapegoat. Which is less to do about him than Starfleet, really, but that's there, and he does make it go well.
What gives you that impression in that episode?
When he's talking to the Admiral, or he's not talking to the Admiral, he's getting those messages from the Admiral saying, you know, if you can make something of this, if you can get something out of it, then go ahead. But the Federation Council's kind of iffy on it, and it's just a feeling I got. I might be reading too much into it. But
that's in The Defector?
Yeah.
That's in The Defector. Yeah, he's getting these messages from this admiral about what's going on, but he never talks to the admiral directly, right? It's just because of the time lag. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a feeling I got the last time I watched it. I was like, oh, he's potentially being set up for a fall here.
That's it. I never even thought of it that way. And I don't think too much about the messages from the admiral. It's kind of like, hey, we trust you to do something. We can't have real-time communication. Do what you're going to do. So I tended not to think about that too much. I mean, you've got to think in some circumstances when he does fail that Starfleet Command really doesn't like it, right?
Oh, God, no.
Who knows? Maybe they think he could have done more to not get assimilated by the Borg or something. I don't know. But
Sisko certainly does.
I mean, he gets put in, he gets put in a lot of difficult situations, and he does get flack for it sometimes. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that... there's the first season episode Coming of Age where Quinn comes aboard with Remick, and they're like, what about all this and this and this and this and this that happened? I mean, of course, it's for a different purpose because they think that something is wrong. But you could look at some of the actions he takes and be like, that's a little weird, or why did you do that kind of thing? I mean, he's doing the best he can with all these weird situations the writers throw at him. But, but he seems to have... you know, quite a bit of trust, I think, from Starfleet Command, because he stays as a captain of this ship almost no matter what happens. Even when the ship crashes, they give him another one, you know, like, and even like in Nemesis, when he kind of destroys like a quarter of the saucer section, it's like, let's just rebuild and send it out. It's cool. It's cool. So he does, I think, get quite a bit of trust.
Which is another reason why the start of First Contact doesn't ring true. Ooh, we gotta keep Picard sidelined. Don't trust him all of a sudden.
Well, it might be like with Pike on Discovery. We want to keep our best away from the fighting.
Well, okay. We'll take a digression into First Contact. I mean, that's because they think he would be too emotionally affected by being near the Borg. And I think that makes a certain amount of sense. I don't know. I tend to give First Contact a lot of... what's the word for it?
Leeway.
I gave it a lot of leeway because I just love the message and everything that's going on. It's my favorite Star Trek movie, but I know it's not yours, Brandon.
It's my second favorite Next Generation movie.
Sure.
I don't like to rank.
No, but it is interesting, though, because it does. I mean, people do talk about a difference between what you see on the series and what you see in the movies. I think based on the certain situations, it works for me, but certainly the situation he gets thrown into in Nemesis is quite different than any situation with, you know, Romulans or head of the Romulan Empire that you ever see in the series. Mm-hmm. And in that situation, he can't keep it completely diplomatic because the guy on the other side is just crazy. So like, and that's the thing, like when you see him in the series, he's dealing with all these commanders that seem like they're very like calculating about the situation, but Shinzon is very like emotional and just driven by all of these things that have nothing to do with what the previous commanders dealt with, right? So in that situation, Picard can't quite maneuver it into a diplomatic situation. It kind of has to lead to a battle. Right. I mean, it seems like that only happens when he's maneuvered into it, not because he wants it.
Well, especially because Shinzon needs his blood. So,
yeah, there is that, which is weird.
Live or die in that case. So, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So the other thing that I see him being very, very much trusted by Starfleet to deal with the Romulans is unification. It never made sense to me, other than the fact that this is the person we're watching, that they went to Picard for this, because if you pick a couple of Vulcans, then you don't have to do all that reconstructive surgery. If something happens to them and they're medically scanned, they're not going to look obviously not Romulan, all of those things. But because of Picard's experience, because of his diplomacy, because of all of that, then that's a reason to send him, even if it's going to take this massive prosthesis to do it. And on Data, too, no less.
Yeah, that type of undercover operation always seems odd to me that they go through that. Cause yeah, most basic scan could determine that they're not that alien race, but, I don't know that Picard like was the right person to go on that mission in unification though. Again, like it seems odd to me that they would send Picard and Data to go get Spock deep into Romulan space. Like to me, that's the kind of operation that should be, you know, Riker, or something like that, like Riker and Crusher or something like that, to go like secondary officers, not the captain. I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't thought about it too much before. I mean, the only connection that I can think of is that Picard's done the mind meld with Sarek. Right. And I know Sarek hadn't done a mind meld with Spock, so he couldn't really pick up anything about Spock from that. But I got this sense that like he was the person that could be most familiar with, well, that's probably not even true, but I mean, most familiar with someone in Spock's family and maybe be able to get some information from Sarek. And then also,
you're talking about Michael Burnham. It all ties into Discovery.
Well, I'm sure he gets a glimpse of Michael Burnham through his mind meld with Sarek. But no, like that's the only thing I can think of is that he knows Sarek through this mind meld. He's had dealings with the Romulans. Who knows? Maybe he's had more dealings with Romulans in the past, you know, 4 or 5 years than anyone else in Starfleet, and is considered kind of an expert on it. But Chrissy, I think you're right. They could pick somebody who's a Vulcan, who could deal with less reconstructive surgery. By the way, while we're talking about Romulans in the Next Generation, people always make such a big deal about whether Klingons have ridges or not, or what they look like. I never hear anybody talk about the ridges that suddenly appear in the Next Generation for Romulans and get no explanation. But anyway.
It's because they got the augment virus. Didn't you watch Enterprise?
The Romulans got the augment virus?
Yeah.
The reverse
and
augment.
It made the ridges instead of taking them away.
Sure. Sure. but anyway, it is a really good question. I mean, of course, the real world answer is that, you know, this is the show that's on, so they have to, and they want Leonard Nimoy on the show. But it is a good question. Maybe you would think, like, maybe it might make more sense if they're like, okay, you know Sarek, so you know someone in Spock's family. We also have this Vulcan over here that's like a Romulan expert, and they can go with you. Because the thing I always think about is like they're on the streets of Romulus, and I don't care how good their universal translator is, they'll be able to tell that like they're not really speaking Romulan, but...
You don't sound like you're from Rateg. Yeah.
Right? It's because I'm from Le Bas, France.
And England.
But yeah. But yeah, that one is an interesting one, because for the other ones, it kind of makes sense like, oh, you know, they're patrolling the neutral zone or whatever, because a lot of these take place in the neutral zone. But this one's on Romulus. That's quite different. I mean, I like the unification two-parter for the most part, but...
Yeah, me too.
I adore it. That's one of my go-to if I just need some Star Trek on in the background, so...
Yeah, the reason they got Nimoy, though, was because it was a direct tie-in to help promote... Undiscovered
Country.
Yes,
it was.
That's right, yeah.
Yes, it was. Aired a month ahead.
Something interesting, sidetrack. Unification was the first Star Trek novel I owned.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I got the novelization for Unification. It was a gift.
It's very good. There's that whole side story about the lieutenant whose brother died and that you never even see on the screen. Go read the book. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everyone read the novels. Listen to us and then go read the novels. Well, so with unification, actually, that brings me to one of my other big points, big questions. Does Picard's perception of the Romulans change over the years? And the obvious answer to that is yes, it has to, because one's perception is always going to change with more interaction with someone. But in the end, does he change how he's dealing with them? Does he change how he's going to come at a situation where he has to do something with the Romulans, whether it's, you know, deal with their dissidents or, you know, run into the Shins on ship?
I don't think so. I think he deals with them the same. He always approaches it from a place of diplomacy. Like, even with Shinzon, while Shinzon's not a Romulan or a Reman, he was raised in that culture. And even Picard, like, when the Thaleron radiation is detected, like, you can see that sense of disappointment in Picard when that's revealed, right? Like, he wanted to believe so badly. You know, and he was there for diplomacy. And even at that point, he's like, you can't just explain this away. You know, so even all the way up to the end with Nemesis, he's dealing the best that he can with diplomacy.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with that. He always comes at it from a place of diplomacy. But in the different situations that you see him, they're all different in some ways. So that diplomacy gets kind of channeled into different solutions or different actions or different investigations or things that he needs to do. Because it's not just him being diplomatic. I mean, there's a lot of these episodes where he's asking for Troy's advice. He's having Data do some analysis. He's finding out, you know, different opinions in the observation lounge. So it's not just the diplomacy that he has toward the Romulans. It's his kind of spirit of collaboration and working together and getting opinions from his officers that you see throughout the Next Generation. But I think you see it pretty clearly in these Romulan episodes that he's going to do that. He's going to gather all the information he needs and not just act on a, you know, a gut instinct for it.
Definitely.
Needs more cowboy diplomacy.
That's so 23rd century.
Yes. Back to Picard, the manager that we were talking about a couple of episodes ago, too. Which is not a bad thing. Yeah, so I think of the things that might change, at least, he's not going to change how he comes at the Romulans, but the perception of them is going to be... His perception of them is going to be a little different. And I think the things that really do that are Sela, because that comes out of nowhere and is completely unexpected. Even for the Romulans, that's an odd play that is never well explained, if you ask me.
Oh, we came up with an explanation on Earl Grey. She's a Section 31 agent who is supposed to fail.
Oh, I'm still playing catch up on Earl Grey. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. But like, that's the only explanation I can come up with, because she keeps failing and they keep saying like, oh, yeah, go forward with your idea. It's cool. Instead of like executing her or something.
Yeah. But I don't understand how she survived after unification, but that's fine. You know,
Section 31 or what's the Romulan?
Tal Shiar. You said Section 31.
I said Section 31. I mean, there is a precedent for that, because you get Koval in DS9, who's a chairman of the Tal Shiar and a Section 31 operative, right?
Mm.
Yeah. So, anyway.
Yeah, that's all right.
But yeah, she keeps kind of failing in these endeavors.
Yeah, so Sela, and then the other example of that is his experience with Shinzon and who Shinzon is. And this whole thing of the Romulans were in a position to put their hands on his DNA at some point in order to make a clone of him. And we're not really told when that is.
There's an explanation in the novels.
That's been a long time since I read the novelization.
Yeah.
Oh, in his memoir.
No, it's in Death and Winter.
Okay.
Yeah, there's like some, I don't know what it is. What is it?
I remember.
It's at some...
It's the waiter at the Crusher Howard wedding. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And Picard was the last of them to...
Or something.
They were collecting. Sorry, I didn't
something
mean to talk
like
over
that,
you.
Yeah.
Well, the first piece of fan fiction I ever wrote was actually a Stargazer story, and the entire prologue to the adventure was this is before Nemesis was like when Picard was like kidnapped by the Romulans. Cause again, at that time I was totally a Romulan fan, and they didn't clone him or anything like that, but they kidnapped him and tortured him. So in my head canon, it was during that Stargazer adventure that I wrote.
Oh, okay.
but doesn't that, break what you see in the neutral zone that they haven't had contact in 50 years?
Shh. It was 15. Shut up.
Could be like an Enterprise where they didn't see them, but they were there, you know.
Right.
He didn't remember. There, they wiped his mind afterwards. He didn't remember.
We can make it work, yeah. But no, that's cool that you're writing those stories.
I love it, yeah. Yeah, no, I didn't. That's one thing I take that back. I wrote one piece of fan fiction because I had to write a science fiction story for a class in like third grade. So I did that. But I never did any proper fan fiction beyond that. So anyway, we digress.
I'm going on a way tangent now, too. But this other thing that I tried to write when I was in high school, I've never read the Wheel of Time series. Right. But like, I always thought that title of a series was so cool. So I was like trying to write my own epic fantasy thing. And the first scene of my epic novel was a complete ripoff of the campfire scene from Star Trek V.
Oh, really?
That's a classic. I mean, it's probably, if we went back, it's probably a ripoff of a half a dozen westerns from the 50s or something, too. Maybe.
Anyways, that's tangent over. I guess that's enough about my fan fiction.
Yeah, actually, as we're talking, I'm kind of curious about something, because I think of how Picard has dealt with the Romulans, and like, do we think someone like Kirk would be different if he was put in these kinds of situations with Romulans?
And we're all silent.
Kirk is whatever they needed him to be.
Yeah.
So if they needed him to be a diplomat, he was a diplomat. If they needed him to be a battle commander, he was a battle commander.
I see. Because I was also thinking about Balance of Terror, because that's kind of an interesting one for Kirk, where it's kind of a mix of trying to be diplomatic, but also, you know, a battle going on. So I don't know. It might be interesting if, like, for him it was a mix. But I think you're right, Brandon. Sometimes it would just be whatever the story would need. For Kirk, he could kind of be that. Yeah. Whereas Picard, they would have you couldn't kind of do that, because it seemed like it was consistent that he would go the diplomatic route if at all possible. Yeah.
Would it fit perfectly into Unification, though? You could plunk Unification into the original series and just swap out Picard and Data for Kirk and McCoy, and boom.
Although if Spock's on Romulus in the middle of TOS, we got something else going on.
True.
That's weird.
True, true.
Right, yeah.
There's more fan fiction for people. There we go. And we've talked about Picard's mind meld with Sarek and Spock, and I think just as a quick point there, I think his perception of the Romulans will have changed after his mind meld with Spock, and after that whole incident on Romulus where he's there. Because, one, he's dealing with Romulans as individuals who are not members of the military, the lady at the soup shop, that kind of thing, and the dissidents. And then, of course, Spock is going to have this sympathetic feel, at least toward the dissidents, if not toward the Romulan government and military. So that's going to give Picard a little bit of a different perspective going forward. And we don't get to see much happening with that, because that certainly isn't relevant with Shinzon, but, you know.
Right.
Well, it's interesting they mention that, because in Unification, Picard is very skeptical about this Unification movement.
Oh, absolutely.
And I don't know if some of that skepticism comes from what he got from the mind meld with Sarek. But yeah, there is something that's very like relentless about it. Like, come on, there's got to be something weird going on here. And I mean, of course, Spock has the point, like, you know, I'll just go along with it and play the role so we can find out what's going on, which, I mean, makes some sense. But like, also in Unification, you know, Spock is this important Federation diplomat who has lots of information, right? And at the end, Picard is like, you want to stay on Romulus? Okay. You know, like, I mean, whereas he could have been like, hey, this is too important. We really need to take you off here. And I don't know if, because...
Yeah, but would Spock have listened to him? Spock would have been like, get out of here. Like, I don't know.
I know, he might not have, but, I mean, you'd think that the people at Starfleet Command wouldn't want Spock on Romulus, you know, dealing with this movement and having all of this, you know, information in his head and maybe being, I don't know, an important bargaining piece or something, right? I mean, it seems like a big risk.
Yeah.
But
that's the whole point.
Right. And that's why they sent him there in the first place, is because, like, they think he's defected, right? And he's got all this information. They got to figure it out.
So because Picard sees he's not defected and he's doing this work that, you know, maybe someday will bear some fruit, it's like, all right, go ahead.
Well, what's what's the Federation going to do? Invade Romulus to get Spock back?
I don't know, but I could imagine someone else, like Sisko, being like, oh, yeah, sure, you can stay here. And then, like, turning around and stunning him and taking him back or something. I don't know, right? I mean, is it because it's Picard, or would anyone do that who's, like, a captain?
I think a lot of people would have been intimidated by Spock.
Yeah. Mm,
I could see that.
Right? And Spock would have been like, no, I'm just staying here. You know, I mean, like, we did get a lot of novels that deal with, you know, Spock on Romulus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like quite a few of them. And, you know, so Spock even left Romulus for the important thing of Kirk's funeral, and right? And on Viridian 3, and then he witnessed him being taken by the Borg. And
yeah, I haven't read those yet, but I have heard
what? You haven't read the Shatterverse? Justin, shame.
There's like 800 novels, okay? I've got through almost 250, but I've still got
Shatterverse are awesome.
That's what I've heard. I have some of them on my shelf, but I have like 10 other... lines of novels that I want to read.
I read the first two of those when they came out, and I was highly annoyed with something, and it's so long ago I don't remember what it was, so they're back on the list to read. Right, so another thing that I was thinking of when I was putting this together about analyzing Picard and his relationship with the Romulans is whether how the Romulans perceive him changes over the years. Why did they find him so important to try to clone him in the first place? Because they want to replace him. They know early on in his career that he's going to be that relevant? Or do they figure we'll just have any clones of any Starfleet officers and we can throw them in wherever, and if the worst they can do is cause a warp core breach, well, that's one less ship on the line.
Yeah, I think I'm going to complicate your question a little bit because I think it really depends, because when you're talking about the Romulans, there are all of these individual commanders who may feel differently about the Federation. People in the Tal Shiar, people in the Senate, different praetors at different times may feel differently about it. So I find it hard to like characterize like how do the Romulans feel about Picard in particular. I mean, and also we watch this show and we think, you know, Picard and the Enterprise E are like really important, but the Romulans are dealing with, I'm sure, all kinds of other competing powers and dealing with stuff here and there and internally and all of that stuff. So it's, I don't know, I find it a little hard to answer the question because I think it can depend on the person and the time period and what they're like interested in. Because I feel like in cloning Picard, and they get into this in Death and Winter, it's like, yeah, they were trying to get Picard, but they were also trying to get a whole bunch of other people just in case or whatever. Like he was a part of like a whole group of people that they were like, well, maybe that'd be useful someday. So I think they have so many like irons in the fire and so many things going on that I think in some ways, except for with maybe like a couple exceptions, Picard and the Enterprise aren't that important.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. Like maybe Picard and the Enterprise are important, but Picard and the Stargazer are not.
Oh, certainly not.
Right. So, and that's like when they would have done that, right? Back in those days, I think they were just looking to get a Starfleet captain cloned.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that bears out because when Neral shows Pardek the picture, he says, I know nothing of him. So maybe I should have said the Romulans who know something about him.
I mean, I think it's interesting because there are different times where they're maybe more confrontational or less confrontational, willing to work together or not, seeming, I mean, because like in these different interactions, I think there's a lot of stuff going on. So it's, I think that like at first when you see them, the Romulans in the neutral zone, it's kind of like Picard passes a certain test by not, you know, arming the weapons and making it confrontational so that they'll even talk to him. But they still warn him like, hey, we're not going to neglect this anymore. You better watch out, right? And there are different commanders that make all of these threats and everything. So I think for the most part, the Romulans see the Federation as an adversary or at the very least someone that you have to watch to make sure that they don't, you know, bite you. So, and I think they probably think of Picard and the Enterprise the same way throughout most of it. I mean, maybe with the exception of like Denatra and Nemesis, who's willing to work with him. But yeah, I think for the most part, they're very wary or see him as an enemy. I mean, what do you think, Brandon, like overall?
Yeah, I've never really considered it. Like, what's the Romulan point of view of Picard? And I think that he's a person that they respect.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, I guess that did their opinion change of him? Yes, because at first they didn't really know who he was. Hmm. You know, like, again, in Neutral Zone, they the Romulan ship is there to go against the Enterprise. Not the Enterprise in particular, but the Federation flagship, right? So the best of the best. They wanted to see what the Federation had to offer. And, you know, because Picard was on the Federation flagship, he was interacting with the Romulans several times. And so I think they know that he's an adversary to be respected and to not underestimate.
So that actually brings me to a point that I was thinking of with this question, is that for those who know anything about him, he is a diplomatic and non-confrontational player. And so if they're going to have to deal with somebody in the Federation, in Starfleet, he's the one to deal with, as opposed to somebody like Worf, who Admiral Jarak comments in The Defector, that people like Worf will get everyone killed.
Or Sisko, that guy's a loose cannon.
Punching Q and all that. So I think that's their perception of them. That's how I was thinking of it.
Yeah. I mean, and they talk about this in the neutral zone, and you might see it later, but the Romulans don't like to make the first move.
Ooh.
They like to kind of feel you out and see what's going on, what your strengths and weaknesses are. So in a way, like the Romulans dealing with Picard and the Enterprise, it seems like it's much more likely to end in not having a confrontation, because Picard's not going to fire first. Seems like they won't either. But yeah, if you went by the advice of someone like Worf, or I think even Riker might want to, you know, take some action first, which could lead to a war. I mean, Picard's the right person, I think, to deal with the Romulans and not have it turn into a shooting war where someone else might make it that way, with the kind of thinking that you see where it's like, they're decloaking, you have one chance, you know?
Which is what we saw, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So you just said something very interesting, Justin, about the Romulans always not wanting to take the first move. And it just made me think of the chess analogy, because, like, in a game of chess, I don't know the exact numbers, but I do know that the black player tends to lose more games than the white player, because the white player gets the initial move and it therefore is always has the advantage right off the bat. Right, because the black player is always responding to what the white player does. And I don't know, it just made me think of that, which I thought was interesting, going back to the chess analogy. And like, the Romulans are constantly losing, you know, so I don't know, just I don't really have anywhere to go with that. It just made me think of something that we said earlier, that's all.
No, that's interesting. I didn't know that about chess.
Well, I was actually looking that up because I was kind of curious about it. Apparently, it's just, I don't know if this is true, but it's saying here in Wikipedia that if the players are beginners, there's not really an advantage. But if you're like stronger, more experienced player, white can have the advantage because they know how to take advantage of that. Yeah. I mean, that is interesting, because it can lead to a draw if nobody wants to move first. But of course, in chess, you don't have the choice to like not move. Somebody has to move first. It has to keep going. But like in these confrontations, sometimes it can just be like, we're not going to make the first move. We're not going to make the first move. So they just kind of talk it out. Yeah.
Right. In that case, you can't. But like in a game of chess, you know, like if you and I were to sit down, we'd be like, do you want to be white or black? Right. And, you know, if I would always forfeit to you to say you go first, you'd be white, you know, like, and so in that case, you go ahead. Yeah. I understand it's not exact, but I mean, like, it is just going back to that metaphor of the chess metaphor.
Yeah. So. No, I think it's quite interesting to think of it that way. And we don't know what kinds of games Romulans play, do we? I mean, like chess kind of type of games, right? Maybe they have something interesting like that. Yeah.
More fan fiction.
Well, didn't they have those little blocks? What did that kid say brought to Spock? He brought those little...
That was syllabic nucleus of the Vulcan language. It was the equivalent of Vulcan alphabet blocks.
Right.
Alphabet blocks. Okay.
And then they played with them when they were kids.
Hmm. That's true.
I don't know. Yeah. And going back, depending on how old some Vulcan games are, you could see Romulans playing a version of Kalto or other Vulcan games that we've heard mentioned that I can't think of.
Yeah, let's see Romulan games in the Picard series.
Yeah. Romulan poker. Right. The only other thing that I wanted to say about the potential of the perception of Picard changing is his perceived support for the unification dissidents. And I say perceived because it's coming from them. I think if one were to look at it, I'd say he probably does support that, at least for them individually, if not the society as a whole. But I think once he's established as a supporter of a dissident group, that makes him more dangerous to the Romulan government, just as it would with any government.
Well, my question is, do they see him as a supporter of this dissident movement?
That's a good question. I just assumed that they knew that he was involved with Spock, so therefore...
Well, he's involved in finding out what's going on with Spock and seeing if he's a defector or not. And I think that you could probably infer he has some sympathies, but I don't know if you could say that they necessarily see Picard as someone who's specifically trying to take action to move forward this thing, this dissonant movement. I don't know. What do you think, Brandon?
Yeah, I don't think that they interpret that Picard is a direct supporter of it. I think they know that he's just there for Spock.
Okay. You guys are giving them more credit for information than I was.
Picard kind of manipulated this whole thing, like, and that's what kind of what I love about it. It's like Picard's known Spock for 80 years, and it's been like this extremely long play, right? Actually, I think that ties into, I think, the ending of the book, Sarek, where their relationship starts. And like, it's cultivating this really long play in order to, I guess, do something down the road. But I think they're manipulating things, and they have quite a bit of information about what's actually going on, I think.
Yeah.
Well, what is it that Tal Shiar would definitely have information like that? Because, like, let's go back to that Deep Space Nine episode when they talked to that one woman, Romulan, and they're talking about Garak, and she's like, he's a cobbler, right? And I think it was slightly Bashir off. Was like a tailor, and she's like, oh, we'll update our records, right? Now, I interpret that one of two ways. It could be that they were just a little bit off, or they could be just testing to see, was it Sisko or was it, I think it might have even been Sisko, and then they were just testing to see how honest is Sisko going to be with us. Is he going to actually correct me?
That was Inter Arma, right? I think that was Bashir that was...
The thing about Garak the Cobbler was Inter Arma, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So anyways, I interpret it that they could also just be, they have the right information. They're just determining how honest is Bashir going to be with us.
Yeah. Or with the response just saying, like, we keep up to date on our information. Like, just letting you know, we know what's going on.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, it is an interesting question. And I mean, Picard gets to be involved with the Romulans, like, yeah, not only on the Enterprise, but on Romulus and all this other stuff. I mean, it's quite a bit. It gets a lot of different perspectives, I think, to see the Romulans.
Yeah. So then that just brings me to the end point of this collection of information, I guess you could say, this research, which is, what does this say about the future? So the whole reason we're having this conversation is that we have the Picard show coming up, and we want to try to figure out maybe what types of things we might see on there and how he's going to be acting. So given his history with the Romulans, I don't think we have any reason to believe he's going to act differently. But this little tiny bit of information we have from the trailer shows that Picard has been through something very traumatic, and he seems to be a bit of a changed man. So could that mean that he ends up being more aggressive, that he's less diplomatic, that he is not what we've seen in the past, and something has prompted him to change? And I don't have an answer to that yet, because if I did, then I'd be a time traveler, and the Temporal Police would have been here.
See, the interesting thing about that is we're guessing. Like, we know that this takes place post-Hoba supernova, right? But we don't know that this armada, this large armada that he was in charge of, had anything to do with that. We're all assuming, I think, that this was like some kind of a rescue armada towards Romulus. But, I mean, if this supernova happened, Romulus would have been destroyed, right? So there would be nothing to save.
No, that's not true, because the Romulan Empire is bigger than Romulus. It's a number of different solar systems, and they could just be rescuing people that are, you know, within the greater Romulan Empire, because it's going to... Okay, I think it is a subspace supernova, so sure, it moves pretty fast. But I think they have a big empire, and there may be people in other systems who are Romulans who need to be saved. That's my assumption.
Right, but if Earth was destroyed, where the Federation headquarters are, right, like, you're not going to be sending an armada to rescue, like, the remaining Federation citizens that are scattered around.
But you don't know. Well, okay, here's the thing. I don't know how a subspace supernova works, but the way that a supernova that we know of in normal space works is that there are all kinds of dangerous particles that come out of it that can destroy life on systems within a certain number of light years. I don't know the exact number, but it can affect...
47.
I Yeah, I'd have to look it up, but I think it can be, I think if I remember right, it might even be within 10,000 light years that it can affect life on these other planets, and the subspace supernova would move faster, so it wouldn't take 10,000 years or whatever. So that's what I'm thinking. It's all speculation, but I think that supernova could be like very dangerous to a large swath of the Romulan Empire.
Well, and right. You're assuming that this is after the supernova. Didn't, if I remember correctly, they knew some time ahead of it that there was going to be, that something was wrong, because that's what Spock was working on with the jellyfish. Or am I remembering that wrong?
No, I think they did have, I don't know how much time it is, but they had a certain amount of time where they knew, and Spock had his jellyfish, the red matter, and all of that. But so maybe they could start evacuations or whatever. I mean, a lot of it's speculation. We need to know more about the show, but I think one of the things that we will see is that maybe Picard's been through something traumatic, but I think that like there is still going to be that diplomatic tendency there. I think it's also possible that not only does it have something to do with Romulans, but there may be a Romulan main character that he has a lot of interaction with. Mm-hmm. That's actually what I would hope for, because we've never had a main character who is a Romulan on a series, and that would be a fascinating thing. I'm thinking that he's working with someone on whatever mission or whatever he's doing with someone who's a Romulan, and he has to kind of adjust to that or deal with other Romulans in a certain way. But I think if we're to project forward, I think there is going to be that diplomatic tendency, but it may be harder for him than it once was. That's the best I can guess.
I think that we're going to have like a young Romulan protege. Like I was going to say this here too. Like, you know, if you look at Ira Graves and that girl that he had on his planet, you know, like something like that, where like Picard's the old man and he's got this Romulan assistant that's with him on Earth on the vineyard, right?
Uh-huh.
Somehow, like that's what I think we're going to see.
Romulan wine culture. Romulan wine culture.
Romulan wine culture, yes. They could teach him how to make Romulan ale on Earth. It's going to be great.
That would Chateau be really cool.
Picard ale.
I want to see him plant the, you know, field of whatever crop it takes to make the Romulan ale.
Blueberries. Cool.
See, I always picture that Romulan ale is done like Canadian ice wine. Like ice wine, they freeze the grapes before they, like they have to wait till the grapes are frozen before they pick them, which makes them really sweet, I guess. And so I'm guessing that Romulan ale has something to do with that. Like you freeze the whatever.
Yeah, if they have Romulans in this show and Romulan ale doesn't show up, I'm going to protest.
That would be ridiculous.
Yeah. See, but the interesting thing about this is that while this is going to be taking place post-supernova, I'm not sure that the Romulans are going to be a major plot element.
Yes.
Right? Like this event affected Picard, but it could be something completely different that is the main story. He's still affected by what happened. But that doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to be ramification of that we see. It could be, but it doesn't have to be.
I mean, you could be right, because we really don't know enough about it yet. But I'm hoping that it has a lot to do with the Romulans, because I think I've always been fascinated by the Romulans, whether you see them in the original series or you know, Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, wherever you see them. And it would be nice to see more, to have a main character that you can really like delve into what that's like, especially after this traumatic event. But we really don't know. Oh, and by the way, I looked it up. I overestimated. A supernova would be harmful to life within about 50 to 100 light years.
47.
Okay, yeah, 47. It could cover multiple systems. Anyway, like, well, I'm sure we may have a better answer to this question after we get like a full trailer, Chrissy, yeah. But we can't really say.
I know. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't even remember if they said that the Armada had anything to do with Romulans. It was just a rescue
they
Armada. Yeah,
they so just said Armada. Yeah.
So that's...
It was an Armada of wine.
The wine Armada. Yeah.
This has been the Assumption Hour with the line. all right. Well, I've given my final thoughts. I think, do you guys have anything you want to add?
Is it time for the show yet?
Well, jump in my time machine over here. We'll get you there. Yeah.
12 soon, days, I mean, till we get some more news. 12
like,
days.
Yeah. And soon enough, like as we record this, they have been shooting for almost 3 months. So, and I think they'd made it through the first 4 or 5 episodes or something. So it's happening. It's really happening. Yeah. It's very exciting. But I'm glad we could talk about the Romulans, because even if they don't have a huge role, there's going to be some role from what we've been told. We just don't know what it is yet. And we'll have to come back to it when we talk about whatever that episode is. Or episodes. Yeah.
Definitely. Well, it's been fun talking about Picard's interactions with the Romulans today, but that isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. Here's what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Ready Room.
Is this the supernatural Klingon episode? What is this going to be? And then it just turns out to go in, you know, go in and dig your own time crystals, State Park. I mean, it's like, okay.
Well, Larry, again, you know, you go in there and there's a basket type thing there, and you put in your 10 quatloos and you mm-hmm. get 60 minutes to dig your time crystal.
Dar-6. Yeah,
actually, the Klingons want Dar-6, don't they?
Yeah.
And you go in, and actually, however many time crystals you can dig in 60 minutes, you get to keep. But the catch is, they're time crystals. So 60 minutes to one person is only a minute to someone else.
Literary Treks.
We have the conversation between Pike and the Starfleet Admiral Terrell. About the specifics of why they were kept out of the war. This is even before we're in a situation where they have no choice but to stay out of the war. They couldn't go back if they wanted to. By, you know, sort of setting up the milestones in the story for this is about when this is happening during season one. You know, that allows us to tell our own independent story within that. But yet also you'll always know where you are in the regular TV show.
Earl Grey.
That question about whether life exists, either yes, it does, because like enough time has elapsed and there's enough planets out there, or no, it doesn't, because we are that race.
Oh.
That seeds yeah. life elsewhere in the universe at some point.
The other answer is it did, but they all destroyed themselves, you know. But that's also kind of unlikely that you'd have lots of civilizations all doing the same thing and destroying themselves, I think. But
to the journey!
And the seven
that's
of
all
nine
I could think about with that
this
one.
This is the Seinfeld in space episode.
I keep waiting for Elaine to show up.
I'm trying to think of what Jerry Seinfeld would say in Jerry Seinfeld's tone of voice inside this episode. Can you do a good Jerry Seinfeld?
Oh, good grief, no. Not even close.
I'm trying to think how I would approach doing a Jerry Seinfeld impersonation. It's not coming to me. He's got that super high-pitched da-da-da-da-da kind of, I don't know, kind
yeah.
of voice.
Well, that you did really well, the da-da-da-da-da. So, yeah, there you go.
Why don't they just warp out of here?
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, please be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and a written review. That helps others find the show.
If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
As I said at the beginning, we'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up.
If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select the line. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So, Justin, where can people contact you when you're not drinking gallons and gallons of Romulan ale?
Ooh, that sounds really good. I think I'll get some after this if I can find the right recipe. Well, you can find me elsewhere on the network as a co-host of Earl Grey. That's our dedicated podcast to the next generation. Have a great time with my friends Amy Nelson and Joe Keegan talking about TNG every week. You can find me on Twitter. I'm at TrekFan4747, where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek. I'm sure I'll be tweeting out lots of Star Trek Picard stuff and lots of stuff from all corners of the Star Trek universe. And you can find me hanging around the Babel Conference on Facebook. So, Chrissy, where can people contact you when you're not putting on your prosthetic Romulan ears?
That's a sound fun, too. I am in the Babel Conference, of course. I hang around there, and I will be happy to see what everybody's saying about our speculations here. You can also follow me on Twitter at TheGoddessLivia. That's TheGoddessLivia, where I tweet about Star Trek and history and other random things. And if you're interested in my take on historical issues that aren't necessarily about Star Trek, although sometimes it comes up, you can follow the page on Facebook that I have with my husband, who's also an historian, and that is History with the Zilagis. And that's spelled S-Z-I-L-A-G-Y-I. And Brandon, where can people find you when you're not speculating with us about what's going to happen on future television shows?
You know, right now, I don't know, because as we record this on July 8th, I've kind of gone dark on social media. I've been dark for about 5 days, and I'm kind of loving it. I've deleted Twitter and Facebook from my iPad, and it's kind of nice. So I would say just the show email as of right now. I'll keep you posted with the new episodes. I'm literally just going on to post about new episodes for the podcasts that I do. So you can find me over on the Fandom Podcast Network with my friends Chris and Tom. We do a show called Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, which talks about all about the Alfred Hitchcock films. And over on the Fandom Podcast Network, my friend Zach and I, we do a show called Franchise Fatigue, which is all about films and sequels and remakes. And you can find us on Twitter at UFPEarth. If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more. Available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. And our very first associate producer will get themselves a flask of Romulan ale.
May take several hundred years to deliver, but we will send it.
So join us next time for another episode of The Line.
I'm back.
Shall we die together?
These people are no one's enemy.